This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Travel Tuesday. A lot of social media shaming when people go on any kind of a trip. We'll also talk about credit cards. Just exactly how is your credit limit decided? A lot of people getting them cut these days. Right now, reports on home sales and prices are dominating today's data. We're joined by Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, based here in Chicago. Diane, let's begin with the home prices. They are rising. What's going on here?
What we're seeing is we have incredibly tight supplies. The new home housing supply is down to 3.1 months. The existing home market, there's just a lot of baby boomers who are now aging in place and not actually willing to put their homes on the market. So you just have this dichotomy out there of tight, extremely tight inventories, which have been going on for some time, and the fact that the pandemic has prompted many fence sitters, would-be buyers, to actually move because of their need to work from home and more space. We've also seen wealthier buyers move into vacation markets and push up bidding wars in many of the hot vacation markets for a second home. That's something that all good, but the housing market in many ways has come to embody all that's good and bad about the COVID virus and how the economy is recovering. At the same time that new home sales and existing homes are playing catch up and surging and getting an extra lift from the pandemic itself as people get off the fence and move on these low mortgage rates, we're also seeing, of course, evictions start to pick up and homelessness rise. So it really is a dichotomy. And to put it in context, we also have consumer confidence falling down. And so what we worry about is, as good as the housing market is, and this is the best it's been in many, many summers this summer, that's great. But is it sustainable given tightening credit market conditions and the tail off in consumer confidence and people's concerns about the future as the underlying recovery starts to lose some momentum?
Does this benefit the people who are selling? I mean, the reason I ask that is because you still have some people who aren't quite back to where they were before the crash in 08.
Exactly. And so it's good for some people who, you know, actually do have equity in their homes. But there has been this reluctance out there and to actually put a lot of homes on the market as baby boomers are aging in place more. But it's also because they can't get back all of what they got in, along with the Gen Xers. They can't get back all of what they get in. But we are now seeing some real price movements. And so, you know, hopefully it does keep those people in the black. The problem is we're also seeing a lot of mortgage deferrals. Those aren't actual delinquencies on mortgage yet. That's because Congress allowed us to not pay our mortgage because of hardships. You don't have to prove hardship related to COVID. What we don't know is a year from now or a little less than a year from now, when those deferrals run out, how many will convert into defaults as well.
Thanks so much. Always good insight from Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago. Just ahead, employees of a major American bank will be doing the workplace shuffle. J.P. Morgan will be using a combination of in-office and at-home work for its staff. Let's learn what's behind the plan. Rick Cobb is here, executive vice president at Challenger Gray and Christmas. Rick, this kind of sounds like what a lot of students are going through with hybrid learning.
Sure. Yeah, I'm wondering what the alternative to this would be. They've sort of announced that they're going to have lunch every day. I mean, you don't really have an option here. Your key employees are going to be incredibly concerned about them and their families, and they want their companies, in this case, J.P. Morgan, to communicate that they get it and that they care and that they're going to change their model incorporate current events.
And they need to, I mean, is this just reflecting the fact that at some point you do need people in-house?
The challenges are different than perhaps companies are really thinking about, depending on their human resources function. You know, the real issue for organizations, there's a couple things that happen at the office that we don't really think much about consciously. That's knowledge share, you know, the incidental communication about what's going on, who's leading different programs, who's in charge, how best to communicate with each other. Those things are social cues that don't happen over a phone or even in a Zoom call. So that's lost. But probably the more critical issue is those people who are even high performing, but at home sort of left to their own devices. And the bell-shaped curve can go from don't know how to stop working, which means they will basically burn themselves out and mess up their personal lives, or alternately just feel not relevant and don't feel engaged. So I think the FaceTime in the office, while it's going to be useful for collaborative work, it's going to be more important to make sure those people feel like they're part of something and that you check in with them to see that they're okay, you know, emotionally.
One of the things that's been interesting is to see companies thinking about saving money because, hey, if everyone's at home, we don't need as much office space. And yet, if you're going to do this rotation, it seems like at least that option is off the table for saving money.
Well, but the scale is different, right? I mean, if you have there's organizations in the financial sector, as an example, you may have 9,000, you know, 15,000 employees in the U.S. worldwide, you might be 50 or 60,000. Not all those people need to come in. They don't all have to have their own individual office or cube. So you can cut back easily down to a quarter of your space. That's certainly going to change the landscape, not only for businesses and their footprint in corporate headquarters, because one of the reasons those spaces existed was the sort of the traditional the CEO needs to see her soldiers, and that's not going to happen. So that's going to change everything around that, because the businesses that support a business community downtown for us in the Loop, you know, those restaurants and bars and dry cleaners, et cetera, they're not going to have the same volume of traffic that they had in the past.
Interesting to think about what it might mean for just mental health when it comes to these employees. At first, okay, I'm at home. This is great. I get to stay in my jammies. I don't have to get up and go to the office.
Yeah.
But I've talked to a lot of people who've had to go back to their office for one thing or another, and they talk about how invigorated they feel even driving, just on their way downtown.
Sure. And I think that needs to be celebrated and recognized by the companies for their people. That, as I said earlier, when you bring them into the office, it can't be just about, oh boy, now we're going to get a lot more work done, because they're probably already working pretty hard. It's about recognizing how they're doing, how they're feeling, letting them share how they feel about that. It seems like a soft issue, but it's the reality of the business, because they can work from home for anybody. Why you as opposed to another organization? It's about how much you show you care about them and that they're part of something and that you matter.
Thanks so much, Rick Cobb. He is Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas. Just ahead on the Noon Business Hour, a leading U.S. airline details major job cuts that are ahead.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Texas-based American Airlines is detailing a huge round of layoffs that will begin in just over a month. Let's get the details now from Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul. Joe, no real surprise here, right? We've been expecting this.
No, we certainly have, and the roller coaster continues. And it's a lot of jobs at American. 19,000 are going to be cut unless the new stimulus package comes through. And I can tell you, people I'm talking to suggest is probably not going to be the savior some people hope. So there's going to be some pain here. And the only good news is this is a slightly smaller number than they warned about a few weeks ago.
So talk about, for people who aren't familiar with it, talk about the reasons why we've been expecting these layoffs.
It's really coming to a head. The first stimulus package included payroll protection, that the airlines got some bailout money, but they're required to keep flying to most destinations and keep their payroll essentially at a very high level through October 1st. And that date's coming now, and after October 1st, they're free to trim their workforce as they see fit. And so it's all coming to a head. We were hoping the stimulus bill would be public by now, but of course the Democrats and Republicans can't find a deal. So airlines have to plan. They got to get those fall schedules out, and they can't wait to the last minute to change, so they're making some big moves.
So is there really anything that Washington can do? Because, I mean, there's the contingency on them taking the initial round of money, but now there's no more contingency.
That's right. I mean, certainly it's possible that right after Labor Day, the stimulus funding will come through and they'll reverse course. But it's getting a little late for that. I don't think this is posturing a signal to Washington. I think they really are saying the demand just isn't there to keep this, these number of seats in the air. And it's interesting. Every airline's approaching this different. We're expecting United to announce pretty soon its plan. It's made some warnings, but hasn't been explicit. And Southwest was able to get enough people to leave through voluntary programs so they can avoid some of the pain right now.
And until travel rebounds, which could be quite some time, they're just not going to have need for all these employees.
Yeah, that's right. We're looking at a schedule about 50% as large as last year in the fourth quarter, and international is even less than that. And that's all disappointing because we felt that this August bounce back was going to continue through the fall. And I think they're seeing it's petering out, and mainly because of business travel bans continue. And, of course, the pandemic in the South is hurting leisure travel. So it's a tough time.
We'll be watching this throughout the fall as we do expect these airline layoffs to become official. Thank you, Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday. People planning trips have to deal with the elephant in the room, COVID-19, and a lot of shaming online.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The father of a man shot by police in Kenosha has an update on his son's condition. America's First Lady will be among the speakers during the Republican convention tonight. On the Business Hour, it's Travel Tuesday. The pandemic generates questions and sometimes spurs anger as people comment on the travel plans of others. Credit card companies use various criteria to determine your spending limit. We'll learn from a longtime industry analyst. Market movement. The Dow is down 128 points. The NASDAQ is up 47. And the S&P is up 4 points. Oil is up 2%. A mix of sun and clouds in Chicagoland. High of 91 degrees. Right now 87 at O'Hare. 85 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The father of the 29-year-old man shot by police is heading to Kenosha to see him today. WBBM's Bernie Tafoya reports he's providing an update on his son's condition.
Jacob Blake's father, also named Jacob Blake, says his son is paralyzed from the waist down and that he has 8 bullet holes in his body. He does not know if the paralysis is permanent. The Sun Times reports the elder Blake asks what justifies the shooting of his son by Kenosha police, what justified doing it in front of his grandchildren. The senior Jacob Blake says his son grew up in North Carolina and was, quote, a happy little dude, moving to Evanston for middle and high school. He says his son has lived in Kenosha for the past 3 years. Bernie Tafoya, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
Melania Trump will be among the speakers at tonight's session of the Republican convention.
The First Lady will speak in a revamped Rose Garden 4 years after a well-received speech where she introduced herself to voters. But the 2016 address was later found to have lines very close to those delivered 8 years earlier by Michelle Obama. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will also speak tonight, drawing some criticism for breaking the precedent of the nation's top diplomats staying out of overtly partisan politics, though the State Department says he'll be speaking in his personal capacity. President Trump's also expected to make another appearance tonight after several on day one. Sagar Magani, Washington.
If you miss any portion of the Noon Business Hour, remember the replay podcast can always be found on our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com, also on the Radio.com app.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are mixed today. Chuck Carlson is joining us, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter based in Hammond. Chuck, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, we're seeing a kind of what we have been seeing back and forth. Yesterday, we had one of those days where it looked like more of the economically sensitive stocks we're doing better. And today it's kind of the pivot back to kind of the NASDAQ type mega cap stocks doing better. The other issue, obviously, today that's impacting especially the Dow Jones Industrial Average is the fact that the Dow is going to be undergoing yet another kind of makeover here. And the three stocks that are leaving the Dow are selling off today, and that's what's hurting the Dow as much as anything in terms of its underperformance relative to the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ.
Talk about that for newer investors who are tuning into the show. They probably assume that these indexes are always static with the same stocks in them.
No, they're not. And I mean, the folks at Dow Jones, S&P, you know, they don't make moves all the time, but when they do, they're fairly significant. And what's driving, one of the factors driving the changes in the Dow Jones Industrial Average is that you have Apple, which is a Dow Jones component, splitting 4-for-1 this week. And the Dow, and it's very important to understand this, is a price-weighted index. In other words, the highest priced stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average carry the greatest weight. So, you know, Apple splitting 4-for-1 means its stock price is going to be reduced proportionately, and which means Apple's weighting in the Dow is going to drop significantly, which means the tech representation in the Dow would be dropping with Apple. So what the folks at Dow Jones are doing is basically trying to make adjustments for that. So, for example, they're bringing in Salesforce, symbol CRM, which trades at $216 a share. High-priced tech stock helps bring that tech weighting back. They're also bringing in Amgen, priced at $245 per share, and Honeywell, priced at $164 a share. So these three stocks will have pretty big weighting in the Dow, and the stocks that are leaving the Dow are lower-priced stocks. You have Exxon, which is priced at $41 leaving, Raytheon, priced at $60 leaving, and Pfizer priced at 38. So it's interesting, kind of the catalyst for all of this is the split at Apple, its impact on a price-weighted index, and adjustments being made by Dow to kind of bring the weightings up in some of those areas that would be reduced by Apple splitting its stock.
So investors shouldn't see this as necessarily anything negative about the companies leaving the Dow, even though, you know, the stocks are struggling a bit today.
Yeah, well, true to a point. I mean, the folks at Dow aren't going to throw out a company that's been doing exceptionally well. And you look at the three stocks, maybe with the exception of Pfizer, you know, Exxon, obviously the oil sector has been struggling, and having less exposure to oil, you know, is something that probably the folks at Dow took into account. You know, Raytheon was kind of a spinoff with the United, the UTX merger, and then Pfizer being at $38 a share probably was a victim of just a low stock price, and the reason I think they're swapping out that for Amgen, which is again $245 a share.
Talk to us about Best Buy. I mean, really gangbuster online sales, but they're just not so sure they can sustain it.
Yeah, you know, that's been a really impressive story. You know, a lot of folks would think, I know several years ago it was like, boy, you know, how is Best Buy going to be able to survive in the world of, you know, Amazon just eating all the brick and mortar people's lunch? But Best Buy has really developed a good e-commerce channel. It's also benefiting, obviously, from kind of the work at home mode and the need for computer equipment, technology equipment at home. And, you know, that stock has done exceptionally well, and it was a pretty good quarter. Now, I think a lot of that quarter may have been baked into the stock price here recently, in a sense that the stock is down on that news. But it's been a solid stock, and my guess is it'll probably continue to be a market beater.
As you mentioned, the Dow or the stock for Best Buy down about 4.5% today at $112.06. Thanks so much. Always good info from Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter. Up next, Travel Tuesday. People posting photos of a trip taken during the pandemic risk scorn from others.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. The pandemic is causing some people to be very judgmental about the activities of others, especially when it comes to taking a trip. Let's talk about the travel police. Joe Brancatelli is here, editor and publisher at joesentme.com, based in New York. We're seeing this all over the place, Joe. If you post any sort of photos, there's going to be people criticizing you.
Well, I think, hello, Cisco, first of all. I think a lot of this has to do with the traditional sense that people don't like you, anyone boasting about travel they can't do. Remember back in the days when you'd have to sit through somebody's travel slides. And part of it was a reminder that you couldn't go there, but they've been. So there's part of that. I think the other part of it is simply you just mentioned how the market is mixed. You know, if you're in the market deep, you're doing pretty well. But if you're most of the rest of America, you're not doing well financially. So the same thing with travel. How dare you travel when the country's got a pandemic, when I'm not making money? And, you know, you can list the endless list. The wiser course might be to be, one, don't be on social media, or two, if you do go on vacation, don't boast about it.
Yeah, just don't put it on social media because you're going to get people who are upset about it. Whether they should be or not is another story. Talk about traveling, given the fact that I know here in Chicago, it seems like every week you have states moving in and off of quarantine lists. It's difficult to even keep any of it straight.
Well, you know, at Joe Sent Me, we've put something up that's free. You just have to click on our coronavirus page. We're trying to link to every state's rules. But I'll give you a perfect example. I live in New York. We have family and friends in Hawaii. For us to visit Hawaii, when we go to Hawaii, we would have to do a 14-day preventative lockdown before we could leave our hotel room or condo. And then, you know, maybe we could go be up with our friends. And then when we return to New York, because Hawaii is on the do not travel list, we would have to lock down in our house for 14 more days on our return. Trust me, Cisco, I love everyone. I don't love anyone enough to be in quarantine for 28 days in order to see them.
Yeah, and then your whole trip in between, right? I mean, you get the first 2 weeks of quarantine, then you actually get to enjoy yourself, and then you quarantine 2 weeks on the backside. That's something I'm sure people are bringing up online, too, as people are posting pictures of themselves on the beach.
And well, exactly. The point being is, you know, I'm not one of those people who are deep in the market and own lots of Amazon.com, so I can't afford to sit in a hotel room in Hawaii for 14 days and do nothing. It ain't even with very low occupancy in Hawaii right now, as in so many places. You know, it's just not a practical thing. So, again, this all adds up to, okay, for whatever reason you are able to go somewhere and the rest of your friends and neighbors aren't, maybe just cool out a bit on it and, you know, don't push the point. Because, frankly, Cisco, it's going to be months, maybe even years, before the average American is going to be able to get back on the road. The signs are not good, both health-wise and financially, as well as the state of the travel industry.
Well, and the challenge here, if you can afford to travel, whatever your situation is, if you are able to do it, I mean, the deals are just amazing, whether it's flights or hotels, because no one's traveling. If you can do it, now really is a good time, at least financially.
Financially, absolutely, although let's be fair about what you will get when you travel there. Let's say you want to come to New York. Okay, I'll leave Chicago out of it because everybody knows what's going on in Chicagoland in Chicago. But let's say you want to come to New York. If you wanted to come to that glorious hotel you've always heard of, that glorious hotel's restaurants won't be open. They won't be doing food service. You can't go to the bar. Okay, in fact, in New York City, you cannot eat or drink anywhere indoors. Okay, and when you get to the rest of the city, again, there's no indoor dining. Many museums are closed. So unless you're prepared to go to someplace and sit on the beach, and that's all you want, is to sit on a beach, that's basically the only vacation you can have right now that's still the same. Yeah. And even then, after you're coming off the beach, don't be expecting to go to a good restaurant.
Yeah, you're right. It is going to be very different for quite a while. Thank you, Joe Brancatelli. He's editor and publisher at joesentme.com. That's Travel Tuesday. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Credit card use is down during the coronavirus outbreak, but some people may need to extend themselves more to make ends meet. Let's learn about credit limits from Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com, based in New York. Ted, a lot of people saying that their limits, well, they've been changed. They've been reduced since the pandemic started. How exactly does a credit card company figure out what a limit should be?
The big two factors are your credit score and your income. There's some other stuff that factors in as well, like your debt-to-income ratio, your limits on other cards, even the type of card that you have. But the big two are your credit score and your income.
Several people have said, okay, my income has stayed the same, my credit credit score has stayed the same, and yet they have cut my limit. I mean, are credit card companies looking around and trying to maybe decrease some of their liability here where they're, I don't want to say randomly, but they are cutting people?
They are. The Federal Reserve found that 60% of banks have tightened terms on credit limits within the past 3 months. The other 40% have left them more or less unchanged. And it really has to do with risk management. Companies worry about these unused credit lines in a time when unemployment is high. They fear they might not get paid back. It especially happens on dormant cards. If you're not using your card much at all, then you represent a risk without any of the good stuff. They're not making any money off of you, but they worry that you might lose your job, run up some charges, you can't pay back. So dormant cards are definitely ripe for limit cuts. Another time I hear about them is if people are showing signs of distress, like you're maxing out the card or paying late.
Are there differences with the type of card and how the card companies view them in regard to the limit?
Yes, there is. In fact, the fancier the card, typically the higher the limit. Like, for example, the Chase Sapphire Reserve is a very popular high-end travel card, and it's part of the Visa Infinite family of cards. Now, those cards all have a limit of at least $10,000. If you have a Visa Signature logo on your card, chances are your limit is at least $5,000. And really, this is kind of just a fancy marketing term, but it does have something to do with the underlying benefits. Typically, the Infinite cards, and to some extent, the Signature cards will have more perks like extended warranties and travel protections and lounge access. So that's a clue also that if you're applying for a fancier card, you'll probably get a higher limit.
Thanks so much, Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. If you miss any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function. It works both online and with the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.